Okay, now we can begin. Welcome back to our Experience Shabbat Shir, everyone. I apologize for the slight delay. I am, like I said, sort of running another program at once, so if I do get distracted for a second, just bear with me, but hopefully the other program should be running smoothly enough that I will not be distracted. Okay, so let's begin. So we are coming towards the culmination of our few weeks series of discussing the various meals on Shabbos. Like I said, next week we're going to be speaking about Malava Malka, because that's sort of like the fourth, it's like the fourth sun, the fourth Shabbos that no one really talks about, meal of Shabbos that no one really talks about, so we'll be speaking about that next week. But for tonight, let's speak a little bit about Shalashutis. Now, to just jump right in and to really get off the to a running start, I want to read for you a passage from the Divrei Emes, speaking about Shalashutis, speaking about the third meal of Shabbos. So he writes as follows: in Kabbalistic literature, the time of the third meal is referred to as Rava Deravin, the time of favor of favors, the time when Hashem is most kindly disposed toward Klal Yisrael. He most sympathetically receives Klal Yisrael's efforts towards spiritual growth. Strangely, the third meal is universally called Shalosh Sudos. Literally, it means three meals, rather than Sudah Shlishis, the third meal, right? So it's interesting that we call it Shalashutis instead of Sudah Shlishis. It depends. Some people do call it Sudah Shlishis, but I think colloquially a lot of people do call it Shalashutis, which is interesting because that would be translated as three meals and not the third meal. And he says, why is that so interesting? Because that shows that all of the meals are sort of included in the third meal, right? So to call the third meal three meals, it means that all of the meals are sort of summed up in this third meal. The Chuza of Lublin, he writes further, explains that the first two meals of the day are eaten at normal meal times when people are hungry. The eating is not obviously in honor of Shabbos. After all, who wouldn't eat a delicious meal whenever it's available? But the third meal comes at a time when people are not hungry. Often they would prefer not to eat at all, or not a mitzvah to do so, right? So Shabbos dinner, everyone's going to have dinner. Shabbos lunch, everyone's having lunch. But Shalashutis, especially in the winter months, but even in the summertime, it's like a really, it could be a, now is actually like the perfect dinner time. Maybe a little bit earlier will be really great. Maybe a little bit later for some people. When it's so early or so late, no one's going to be eating a meal at that time. And so Shalashutis is specifically something that's clearly specifically meant to be more of a mitzvah. And it's clear when a person is eating it, it's more for the mitzvah purpose and not necessarily for the I'm hungry purpose. One other piece, and then we'll jump off into the actual conversation, is a piece from the Shem Mishmuel. He writes, the three meals of Shabbos allude to the three patriarchs, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. We know this, we've been speaking about this for the past 2 weeks. Yaakov as their descendant and the symbol of the third meal, right? We said the Yitzchak is the Friday night meal, Avraham is the Shabbos lunch meal, and therefore the third meal, Shalashutis, is going to be Yaakov, encompasses both Avraham and Yitzchak. So the reason why the third meal is representative of Yaakov is because Yaakov is the grandson of Avraham and the son of Yitzchak, is he is encompassing both Avraham and Yitzchak, and therefore it must be that the third meal is meant to encompass both the first Shabbos meal and the second Shabbos meal. We'll have to see what that means exactly. Thus, the Shalashutis comprises the two previous meals, which is why it is called Shalashutos, three meals. Okay, so with all of that sort of very lofty and very intense information, now I would like to begin the conversation on Shalashutis. I began with that because, as we'll see throughout the conversation of Shalashutis, it is a meal that societally, I guess you can say, we do not seem to respect the meal that much. It's just like, oh, it's this Shalashutis, you know, maybe in shul in normal times. Well, in our shul, we have the fanciest Shalashutis of all the shuls. But in the average shul, you know, you have a little bit of a herring and you have a little bit of matzah, something, you put it together and then it's Shalashutis. People don't seem to give respect to Shalashutis at all. Many women don't seem to eat Shalashutis, which we'll see in a little bit is totally insane that that's the case, that seems to be the reality. On the same vein, though, when you read about Shalashutis specifically in much more Kabbalistic writings, but even in the basic halachic writings in the Shulchan Aruch, you see there's such a significance to the third meal, and there seems to be this total disconnect with how we, with how many people practice their lives, and what the halachic and the Kabbalistic writings seem to say about it. So let's see what Shalashutis is all about and try to make sense of this disconnect. Okay, so let's begin the discussion by, I think, reiterating, I believe we said this already either at some point over the past 2 or 3 weeks or so, and that is, what is the nature of all the three meals of Shabbos? Are they rabbinic or are they from the Torah? So it seems that, according to many opinions, Shabbos meals are rabbinic in nature. However, according to the Levush, right, the Levush is the halachic sefer that never seemed to hold the same level of importance in our Masorah as the Shulchan Aruch, but it is an all-encompassing halachic text where he summarizes all of the halacha, like the Shulchan Aruch. So the Levush writes that all Shabbos meals are actually a Do'a Raisa, they are Torah commandments, and so even though it seems like at the end of the day most people don't agree with that, it's important to note that a person who is wants to follow the Torah commandments of Shabbos, we should strive to follow the rabbinic commandments, but let's say someone says, I'm only going to keep the Torah commandments, you know, and maybe I'll worry about the rabbinic commandments next year. So according to the Levush, at least all three Shabbos meals are from the Torah, which is begs an even larger question. How could it be that anyone would ever feel more lax about Shal Shudas, understanding that it is a Torah commandment? People are so strict and so careful about Halakas Neros, lighting Shabbos candles. That's clearly a rabbinic mitzvah, but according to the Levush, at least, the three meals, including Shal Shudas, is a Doraisa, so it's an unbelievable thing how some people could be so strict about lighting Shabbos candles, but not so strict about eating Shal Shudas. Okay, and let's read the first source of the evening, and that is from the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch, when he begins to write about Shal Shudas, he uses the following language, which is so striking for him. He says, "Yehi zahir me'od lekayim su'uda shlishis." One should be very careful to keep Shalosh Shudas. Now, it's very interesting that the Shulchan Aruch would use such a strong language. The Shulchan Aruch is not a Musar Sefer, it is a Halacha Sefer. So he should just say, keep Shalosh Shudas, or you should eat Shalosh Shudas. Why does he have to say you should be very careful? So he only makes comments like this in a few cases throughout the entire Shulchan Aruch, and it would seem that there's one of two possibilities. Either he says, be very careful because it's such an important mitzvah, or maybe he writes, be very careful because he knows that people of his generation and seemingly since then were not so careful in Shalosh Shudas. So he says one should be very careful to keep Shalosh Shudas, whether that's because it's a really important mitzvah in its own right, or because people are lax in it, be careful. Everyone should be eating Shalosh Shudas. The af im hu sava. Let's say he's totally full, says the Shulchan Aruch. What is he supposed to do then? Yachol kayim osak bikabetza. Then at the very least, what he should do is he should eat just an egg's volume of food just to be yotze. V'im ef shar lo klal lechol. But let's say the guy is so stuffed, he really can't eat anything. It's a winter Shabbos, and he just finished lunch an hour ago, and he davened mincha, and now it's time for Shal Shudas. So einu chayav litzayer et atzmo. He's not obligated to pain himself to eat, but he ends again with a little bit of musar. V'chacham einav berosho shelo yimalei bitno besudas haboker kadei litin makom lesudas shlishit. He says anyone who has half a brain should understand that if he knows that he has to have Shal Shudas at 4 o'clock, whatever it is, then he knows when he's finishing lunch at 3 o'clock that if he had five pieces of brisket and six bowls of cholent, so he should have half a brain to understand that he's not going to be able to eat at Shal Shudas, and that's a ridiculous and not a smart thing to do, because you are obligated equally in Shal Shudas as you are in the afternoon meal. So try not to eat so much in the afternoon meal. Eat, enjoy, but leave a little bit of room so that you can enjoy your Shal Shudas. One other piece of the Shulchan Aruch as it's relevant to the basic obligation of Shal Shudas, and that is the Shulchan Aruch writes just a one-liner, Nashim Chayavos Besuda Shlishis. Women are obligated in Shal Shudas. I have no idea where it came from that some women think that they're not obligated in Shal Shudas. I can only imagine and assume that some women think they're not obligated because the average woman is not let's phrase it like this, there are more men usually who come for Shabbos Mincha than there are women, and so maybe there was this rumor that at one point started that some women thought, I guess I'm not obligated in Shal Shudas because I'm not obligated to be there for davening. So A, you should be there for the davening. No reason not to. If you're raising kids or something and it's hard for you to be there, then fine. But there's no reason why all genders should not be at Shabbos Mincha. But okay, let's say you're not going to be at Shabbos Mincha. Still, you should be having Shal Shudas because it's, again, either a Doraisa commandment, a Torah commandment for all women and all men to be having Shal Shudas, or it's a rabbinic commandment. And okay, so the rabbis said you should do it, so we follow the rabbis as well. So all men and women should be eating Shal Shudas. That is unequivocally true, and anyone that says otherwise is just mistaken. However, all of that said, and all of that strung musar to start us off, there is a lot to talk about now of understanding why Shal Shudas does seem to get the raw end of the deal in so many situations. There are two areas in particular that Shal Shudas seems to get the raw end of the deal on. One of them is Kiddush, right? So we give such strong musar that Shal Shudas is equal to the other meals. It's so important. You have Shabbos dinner, you have Shabbos lunch, so of course you should have Shal Shudas. Maybe it's a D'oraisa commandment. Why no Kiddush? there are three meals, and I only make Kiddush at two of them. That seems to show us that Shalosh Shudas is not as important, because there is no Kiddush. So why is there no Kiddush at Shalosh Shudas? Says the Shulchan Aruch, Eino tzarich l'kadesh b'suda shlishis. So one is not obligated to say Kiddush at Shalosh Shudas, aval tzarich l'vtsoa al shtei kikaros, but one is obligated to have lechem mishnah. Most people don't realize that as well. Some people think, oh, it's okay, I'll just have like an apple, or I'll have a cookie or something, and I'm yosei Shalosh Shudas. We'll see in a second, maybe, according to some, you might have fulfilled your obligation, but at the end of the day, one is obligated to have two loaves of bread. End of story. Not much more to talk about. Okay, but that's not what we're talking about right this second. We're talking about Kiddush. So the Shulchan Aruch says no Kiddush is required for Shalosh Shudas. Why is no Kiddush required? So the Mishnah Berurah writes as follows. He says, because we make Kiddush during the day, because we, meaning Chazal, like to connect the day to the night. If at night, ma laila sugi, let's make the connection and let's read a little further after that. So just like at night we're obligated to make Kiddush, so too Chazal say, so if we're obligated in the night, let's also have the obligation in the day, right? We spoke about this previously, that at night there's clearly a d'oraisa commandment to have Kiddush. In the afternoon, it's not so simple if the obligation is rabbinic. Maybe it's from the Torah, but most likely it is rabbinic. And the rabbis say, if I'm obligated in the night, I should be obligated in the day as well. But the Mishnah Berurah writes, ma laila sugi. So Chazal say, if it's enough just to make Kiddush once at night, right, there's only one commandment and only one time where we make Kiddush at night, so too it should be enough to make Kiddush only once during the day. When do we make Kiddush during the day? The second meal. Why? Because that's the first meal. Comes the third meal and say, why should we have to make Kiddush a second time during the day if we only make Kiddush once at night? And therefore, Chazal said, you're only obligated to make Kiddush once during the day, and we do that at Shabbos lunch. Don't think that Shalosh Shudas is any less than no. It's because Kiddush itself only needs to be said once during the entire day, and since Shalosh Shudas happens to be the second meal of the day, therefore we don't say Kiddush. But technically, it is equally as important as all the other meals. The Rambam even goes so far as to say, as if it's tzarech lekboa kol seuda mishalosh tan al hayayin v'letzoa al shtei kikaros. The Rambam agrees with the Shulchan Aruch, and he says that one is required. That one is required to have two loaves of bread, the Shulchan Aruch wrote, but he also says that one is obligated to have wine at his Shalosh Shudas meal. Now, there is a bit of a machlokas as to what the Rambam means. Is he saying that you're obligated to make Kiddush, or you're obligated just to drink a little cup of wine like you would at any nice Suda, so it's not so clear. However, there are some who believe that the Rambam says one is obligated to make Kiddush. What would that Kiddush look like? Well, I would assume that Kiddush looks exactly like what we said the basic obligation of Kiddush at Shabbos lunch is. If the basic obligation of Kiddush at Shabbos lunch is Bori Pri HaGafen, so seemingly the basic obligation of Kiddush, if you believe there is an obligation of Kiddush at Shalosh Shudas, would also be Bori Pri HaGafen. I've never in my life met someone who made Kiddush at Shalosh Shudas until this past year. I was walking with someone, and this is maybe an only in Merrick story, walking with a lovely individual who lives in Merrick, and he loves Shalosh Shudas, very into it. He told me every single week, or at least in the summer months, in normal times, he would host a Shalosh Shudas in his house, and he always makes Kiddush. I said, why in the world are you making Kiddush? He said, I don't know. That's what I always did. I made Kiddush. I said, okay, I guess you're following the Rambam. All right, so again, the Rambam seems to hold you make Kiddush. We don't hold that because we follow the Shulchan Aruch who says not to make Kiddush, but there is such an idea, such a custom. And again, that doesn't mean that there's anything less about Shalosh Shudas. It just means that it's an idea within Kiddush itself that you only need to make Kiddush once in the evening and once in the day. What about other foods at Shalosh Shudas? So again, this is a big misnomer, right? People think that I don't have to have as big of a seuda for Shalosh Shudas, and that probably all started because of the fact that, again, Shalosh Shudas is not at a regular mealtime, so since the beginning of time, everyone's been trying to figure out, how do I check the box of fulfilling my obligation of Shalosh Shudas, but, I don't really want to eat so much, so what do? How do I get out of this? So says the Shulchan Aruch explicitly, Tzarech la'asos bepas, one is obligated to make the meal over bread, as we read previously, you have to have two loaves of bread, like every other meal. But these are words that have been heard around the world. Says the Shulchan Aruch, there are those that say that one can actually fulfill their obligation with having some mazonos. Then he says, some say you could even maybe be yotze with just a little fish or a little bit of meat or something. You have a piece of gefilte fish, or you have some leftover corned beef from last night, they have some cold corned beef, so maybe you can be yotze with that. Aval lo beperos, but that opinion says you shouldn't have fruit. Fruit cannot fulfill your obligation. V'yeshmam da'afilu beperos yachol la'asosa. But then there are opinions who say even with some fruit you can fulfill your obligations. V'svara rishona, but says the Shulchan Aruch, these are very nice ideas, and there are rabbis, I guess, who have held these ideas over the years. But v'svara rishona ikar, the first idea is really the right one. Shetzarich la'asosa bepas, that you should be having a meal over bread. El imkin hu sava bioter, but if you're so full, right? You're that fool that the Shulchan Aruch spoke about. You did it, you forgot this week that there's Shalshudas, is as if there hasn't been Shalshudas every single week since the beginning of time. You forgot that Shalshudas was coming in half an hour right after Mincha, and so you're so full. So what do you do? Okay, so you need to have Shalshudas so you can have some other food. You can have an apple or something and really fulfill your obligation. But the base obligation is to have bread. The base obligation is not just to have bread, but to have two loaves of bread, because it's a regular Suda like the rest of them. How did this practice become to have less bread, to have less than the status quo, right? No one ever says, how come at lunch maybe you could fulfill the obligation with just an apple? Because it was just a reality. Everyone was looking to try to figure out how to get out of this because they were so full and they didn't want to stuff their face, right? Stuffing your face is also not such a good thing to do. It's also a prohibition to eat too much, right? So people started saying, okay, so maybe you do this, maybe you do that. And it's true, on some level you can say it's not an achilas keva. To eat a fruit is not a set meal. What's the proof that eating a fruit is not a set meal? Well, you know, and if you were in Yana Dioma, and God willing, in a month or so, we'll be having sukkahs. You can have a fruit outside of the sukkah. Even one who is obligated to eat in the sukkah can have a piece of fruit out of the sukkah, because it's not a set meal. So it's a little bit weird to say I can have my set third meal on a piece of fruit, but nonetheless, it's a dispensation. It's just a leniency. If you want to feel good about yourself, I guess you can say. But at the end of the day, one should be having shalshudas. They should be having shalshudas on bread. They should be having shalshudas on two loaves of bread, and that seems to be the basic a bottom line answer. That should be everyone's goal. Now, it does happen. Let's say, you know, I'll speak openly and honestly, as I always try to. The past several weeks, as we've been having our interesting Mincha Maariv situation at the shul on Shabbos day, so it's sometimes hard for me to have a meal, the third meal before I run to Mincha on Shabbos afternoon, because usually we try to go out, we try to visit some people in the shul, whatever it is, and so we're sort of stuck. So just a few weeks ago, I realized I was running late to Mincha, so I grabbed a couple of cookies and I ate some cookies on the way to shul, because you can't have shalshudas after Mincha, because it's already sunset, and so I did that. Now, is that the ideal? No. Did I fulfill my obligation? I guess according to some I did, but the absolute ideal, again, one should be having challah, two loaves of challah, etc. One further idea, one further leniency, and this is wild leniency, is quoted by the Magen Avraham, quoting the Shla. Now, there is one case of Shalashudas that is the most halachically complex case in all of cases of Shalashudas, and that is the case of Shalashudas on Erev Pesach. Why? What does this mean? So let's say if you have you have Pesach that's starting on Saturday night, right? Sunday is the first day of Pesach, and therefore Shabbos is Erev Pesach. Now, what's the problem with Shabbos being Erev Pesach? Well, we have two issues. One, because you can't have challah, you can't have bread after a certain time, where you have to stop eating chametz at a certain time. And not only that, but you can't eat matzah the day before Pesach. So how in the world are you supposed to have a shalashudas if you can't have any bread or have any sort of a lechem whatsoever? So there are many creative answers given to this question, and one answer is so wild that no one else likes and no one else quotes, but it is an idea and it's worth reading. And that is from the Shla. The Shla says, "V'shla kasev b'shem haZohar, in the name of the Zohar, Sherashbi, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, haya osik batora b'makom suda shlishis." Instead of eating shalashudas, instead of having his bread or his meat or his apples, whatever it is, he would learn Torah. And he fulfilled his obligation of shalashudas by learning Torah. Now, this is an unbelievable idea, again, because no one would ever say on Friday night, don't have your Friday night meal, make some kiddush, and then just learn Torah, because that sounds crazy. And so the notion of saying that you can fulfill the third meal with that is also interesting. I don't want to say it's crazy, because these are very, very holy people, way, way above my pay grade. And if they thought it was a good thing to do, then who am I to argue on them? But many people did argue on them, and so this is not the accepted opinion and the accepted way to follow. However, I say this only with a grain of salt, but it is worthwhile saying, that is that at the end of the day, if a person finds themselves in a pinch and they are, let's say, walking to shul and the shkia is going to be soon and it's not, they're not going to have, they know they're not going to have shal shudus, it's just not going to happen. So I guess there is something worthwhile to say at this. Give a dvar Torah to yourself. Learn, do a little bit of learning in your head. Worst case scenario, what did you do? You missed out on the mitzvah of shal shudus, but you learned a little bit of Torah, which is also a good thing to do. However, to rely on this in a regular situation seems to be way beyond the pale of anything that we accept in our halachic framework, but it is a worthwhile idea to be aware of. So again, one should be having challah, one should be having two loaves of challah at Shal Shudas, but there are other leniencies as well. As the Mishnah Berurah writes himself, "Ulekulei Alma," everyone agrees. La mitzvah mina mufchar. The right way to do shal shudas is bepas b'shnei kikaros, with bread and with two loaves of bread at that. And he says, "Ela depligi leinyan dievid im yatsa bazeh." There is a question that b'dievid, at the end of the day, if you're stuck between a rock and a hard place, you need to fulfill your obligation. Can you fulfill your obligation with all these other things? And that's what all these different opinions are. But no one says that the right way to do shal shudas is to be having anything less than two loaves of bread. So your goal should be to have it like that. And again, if you're stuck 1 week out of the year, you make a mistake, you're so full or whatever, then can you be yotze? That's the question. But otherwise, one should never be thinking going into shal shudas that they're going to do anything less than that. Now, with that, there is the Chabad minhag when it comes to shal shudas. Has anyone know familiar with the Chabad minhag of shal shudas? Just don't say what it is, just raise your hand if you're familiar. Oh, no one is familiar. Great. So the Chabad minhag of Shal Shudas is, there's two minhagim. As far as I know, many Chabadnikim don't have anything for Shal Shudas. They just don't, they're not goreset. They just assume it's not part of the thing that they do. And some Chabadnikim say, no, it's a mitzvah to do it, I guess, but, they don't eat bread. They eat other foods, just not bread. And so I have no idea why this is. I did some research into it, and there are some explanations given. It seems to be totally antithetical to everything that we hold in terms of our halachic process. Now, I assume what happened in the same way that, that there's one other example that's as equivalent to this in the Chabad world, and that is sleeping in the sukkah. Chabadnikim don't sleep in the sukkah. It doesn't make any sense. It's a mitzvah d'oraisa to sleep in the sukkah. Many men in our circles don't sleep in the sukkah. We have other justifications for it, but we make the justification. Chabad is like, they just assume that one is never obligated to sleep in the sukkah. Again, that's a conversation also for probably a month from now and not for right now, but it's in the same category. Chabadnikim don't eat shal shudas, and they also don't sleep in the sukkah. So if you want to know why, I guess talk to your local Orthodox Chabad rabbi, but it's worthwhile to note within the context of understanding all these ideas. I'm sorry, just hold on 1 second. Okay. Sorry about that. Okay, so with that, let's make one or two more points. And the first that I want to make is the notion of extending shal shudas. Many people, this is a big argument in our shul, for those of you who have been zochet to be there for shal shudas in our shul in the olden days, and God willing soon in the new days, post-pandemic times, God willing, the big question in our shul is, when do we start Maariv? Do we start Maariv once Shabbos is over, or do we start Maariv 10 minutes before Shabbos is over? Now, this idea is so unbelievable, because nowhere else would you have someone say such a thing. It's like you have a doctor who's in surgery, and so you ask the doctor, do you want to finish surgery on time, or do you want to finish surgery 10 minutes before you finish? Hey, that doesn't make any sense. The Shabbos is over at a certain time. Why would anyone ever daven and think to daven Maariv before Shabbos is over? We know that nowadays, in a Shas Dechak, as we call it, right, in these unbelievable times, we do daven Maariv a little earlier now than ever before, but in general, it's not something that we should do from a lichachila perspective. There are, however, many shuls that do this, that do daven Maariv 10-15 minutes early before Shabbos is actually over, and when Shabbos is over, that's like when they get to their havdalah in the shul, so everyone is happy. Sorry, hold on 1 second. Okay, so in our shul, we've been pretty machbed and pretty strict to make sure that we always daven Maariv once Shabbos is actually over. And this is actually an idea that's based in a lot of different sources. But the first and most important one is probably from the notion of extending Shalashutas, right? The notion that Shalashutas is not something that should, is not a meal and not an obligation that should just be checked off on the box, but rather it's an obligation that we should sit there and enjoy. There are many Hasidic Rebbes who continue their Shalashutas well into the evening. Shabbos could end at 9 o'clock, but they'll be doing Shalashutas still at like 11:30 at night. And the notion and the idea is because even from a, before we go into any sources, from a common sense perspective, we know, and as we've been saying continuously since the beginning of this Shir series, is that Shabbos is a time about, is a time that is all about connecting to Hashem, connecting to our Creator. One who wants to run away from Shabbos and end Shabbos sooner is as if you're saying, God, I don't want to be so close to you. Someone who extends Shabbos and is, and has the ability to sit in this Shabbos experience, for a longer period of time, that is someone who's saying, I want to be closer to Hashem. So therefore, there is a lot of beauty and a lot of, it's a really nice idea to extend Shalashutas, because usually one has their Shalashutas at the, towards the end of Shabbos, and therefore that means you're extending Shalashutas means extending Shabbos. So where, is there anything that we could point to that actually mentions this idea? So there are two sources that I want to give. And one is from Rabbi Soloveitchik's Sefer Days of Oa. And in his book Days of Oa, he tells an amazing story that I'm going to read for you now quickly. He says as follows. Not far from where our family lived, there was a Mojitzer Shtibel, where I would occasionally go for Shalashutas. The Hasidim would be singing B'nei Hechala, Hashem Roi Lo Echsor, again B'nei Hechala, again Hashem Roi Lo Echsor. And he said it occurred to me that they were singing because they wanted to sing, they were singing because they did not want to allow Shabbos to leave. I remember, this is the Rabbi Soloveitchik writing, I remember an encounter in the Shtibel as a small child. One of the men who had been singing most enthusiastically, wearing a kapata consisting of more holes than material, approached me and asked if I recognized him. I told him that I did not, and that he introduced, I told him that I did not, and he introduced himself as Yankel the Porter. Now, during the week, I knew Yankel the Porter as someone very ordinary, wearing shabby clothes, walking around with a rope. I could not imagine that this individual of such regal bearing could be the same person, yet on Shabbos he wore a kapata and a shtreimel. That is because his soul wasn't Yankel the Porter, but even Yankel the Prince. Well, after nightfall, I naively asked him, when do we daven Maariv? He replied, do you miss weekdays that much that you cannot wait to daven Maariv? Right, so this is a great story of the Rav being given Musar when he was a young man. And the Chassid basically said to him, why is everyone rushing? Where are you going that you really need to be out of here so much? Right, so nowadays we know what we're rushing. We have priorities, right? We have hockey games to go to, and we have movies to go to, and we have a dinner with friends. So okay, I guess that's some level of a priority. But at the end of the day, the notion should be understood, especially in the world that we're living in now, in which no one's really socializing, no one's going anywhere. The notion of extending Shabbos is a beautiful thing, right? In particular, since we have Shabbos the way we have it now with our shul, that we're davening Mincha Maariv, and you can't have Shalashutas at that point when you come home, but Shabbos is still, there's like 15-20 minutes left of Shabbos usually, and then Shabbos is over. Nothing wrong with extending it, sitting on the couch, reading a book, reading a sefer for an extra 15-20 minutes, and finishing Shabbos a little bit later. Why is anyone rushing anywhere? It's something that is completely a symptom of our generation, that people are always rushing somewhere. Sometimes it's a good place, sometimes it's a bad place, but it's always good to extend Shabbos a little bit. We do try to do it on the front end. That's why we have candle lighting 18 minutes before Shabbos. That ideally should be kept, but I know more often than not is not kept. But we should also have some notion, some idea that we're extending Shabbos a little bit on the other end as well. One further story that I want to quote, and that is from the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim, I'm reading for you now, once spent Shabbos in Warsaw, where a large crowd gathered to attend Shalashutas and listen to the Torah commandments of the great Tzaddik. The Chafetz Chaim spoke passionately to the spellbound audience about strengthening Torah observance and refinement of character traits. The speech continued with one deep thought leading to the next, and there seemed to be no end in sight. Gradually growing impatient, the audience cast anxious glances at the big wall clock and with rolling eyes expressed their restlessness. Noticing the people's impatience, the Chafetz Chaim remarked, "Why don't you take pity on your grandparents and your great-grandparents?" The audience was perplexed at this bewildering statement. The Chafetz Chaim explained, "The Medrash says that as long as the Jews have not recited the Kiddusha de Sidra, the order of Kiddusha in Uvalet Zion Goel, part of the Marav services on Motzei Shabbos, then the fires of Gehenim that were dormant on Shabbos will not begin to rage again, and the souls are at rest. Perhaps you have a grandfather or great-grandfather who values that you draw out the Shabbos." After that, the assembled waited patiently until the Chafetz Chaim decided that it was time to daven Marav. Right? There is an idea. The Shulchan Aruch or the Ramah quotes this idea, befeirish, that there is this notion that something is going on in Gehenim, that the fires of Gehenim are like frozen over Shabbos, and the longer you extend Shabbos, essentially, the longer the fires are not burning. So again, we don't understand what any of this means, but evidently there's a notion that one who extends Shalosh Chodesh and thereby extends Shabbos will allow any ancestors that might be burning, God forbid, in Gehenim, to be spared a few extra minutes of burning, because as long as you're continuing your Shabbos, and we assume that all of our ancestors, their Shabbos is also continuing. So there is a notion, an idea of that as well. Again, we don't understand at all what it means, but it's a beautiful thing that one should be trying to extend their Shabbos connection to that, extending their Shal Shudas as well. Okay, I know we're way over time. I apologize for that. One last idea, and that is from the Nesiva Shalom. And Nesiva Shalom talks about Shal Shudas, and he and many other Kabbalistic sources and Hasidic sources talk about the beauty of what Shal Shudas is all about. In particular, we quoted at the beginning from the Divrei Emes, the notion that Shal Shudas is what we call the Rava Deravan, that it's a time of favors, it's a time of absolute connection to Hashem. And then Nesiva Shalom summarizes this beautifully. I have a few excerpts that, with your permission, I just want to read with you very, very briefly. He writes as follows, "Ukumol came. Yish b'Shabbos Kodesh Gimel Madregos Elu." There are three levels to every single Shabbos. What are the three levels? Leil Shabbos Kodesh Hu Bebechinas Yishkon Chatzrecha. The opening part of Shabbos, Shabbos night, Friday night, the first meal, if you will, is the notion of standing in the courtyard of the Beis Hamikdash. Sha'az Hi Haknisa LeShabbos Kodesh, because this is you entering Shabbos. To get into the Beis Hamikdash, you have to go through the Chatzer. You have to go through the courtyard. U'Kamosha Omrim Az L'Chadodi Neitze Hasada L'Chakel Tepuchin Kidu. Right, so this is like the beginning of the wedding process, right? That's what we say, lechadodi. We're going out to greet the Shabbos queen, right? It's the beginning of the marriage ceremony. Yom HaShabbos, the day of Shabbos, meaning the Shabbos meal, hu bebechinas nishba'a betov betecha, asher az tis'aneg al Hashem. It's the time of enjoyment, enjoying our connection with Hashem. Namely, it's the time in which we are entering into the house of God. This is when we enter into the Beis HaMikdash kavayachol. Kedisa besoar HaKodesh, the Zohar explains, b'yom HaShabbos besudasa tenyana ksiv az tis'aneg al Hashem. This is the time in which we finally get to enter into Hashem's house to enjoy ourselves with Hashem, etc. That the third meal, the Shabbos, k'siv v'hachaltiicha nachlas Yaakov avicha. The third meal, Shal Shudas, that's the Shabbos about inheriting Yaakov. Dahi sudasa d'zayir impin shehiba b'chinas kadosh echalecha. What is Shal Shudas all about? What's the third part of Shabbos all about? The third and the highest stage of Shabbos. It's when we get to enter into the sanctuary of God. Ki kadosh hakadoshim. Shal Shudas is evidently like entering into the whole of holies. Shal Shabbos, who balos hamincha b'shal Shudos, is Rava derazin. That Shal Shudos is evidently this time of favor of favors in which we enter into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, the highest level of Shabbos. What in the world is this highest level of Shabbos that we're talking about? He says as follows. Okay, we'll skip that. He says as follows. Shal Shudas is the time, it's the meal, it's the period of Shabbos in which the night begins to once again take over, the sun begins to set, right? Shabbos is almost over. But this, therefore, is the time in which we get to speak with the king face to face, mouth to mouth, right? Because if we've been saying for so long that Shabbos is about connecting to God, then now after this whole Shabbos process from the Friday night meal to the Shabbos day meal to now Shal Shudas, we finally have worked ourselves up. We've worked our way up to have a face-to-face conversation with God, kaveyachol. Sherotza ledaber imo mi lev lev, that God, at this point of Shal Shudas, wants to speak to us. He wants to have a heart-to-heart with us. Lehotzi kol hama'ek alibo. He wants to know everything that's distressing us. He wants to know everything that's bothering us. He wants to know everything that's going on in our lives. Ulevakish es kirvas hamelech abrichu. And this is the time in which we can feel closest to our Creator, to God. This is the time in which we should be able to realize that we should be asking God for anything. It's an Eis Ratzon. It's a time in which we should be saying, God, here is all the issues in my life. Here are all the concerns and all the fears and all the negative feelings that I have in my mind and my heart and in my life right now. And I'm going to lay them all on the table. And hopefully, because it's Shalashudas, because it's the highest point of the week, because it's the point that I'm closest to you, God, then hopefully you'll be able to hear them and God willing answer them in a favorable way, in a way that seems favorable to me. God willing, that will seem favorable to you as well. That is the time of what Shalashudas is all about, recognizing that this is the pinnacle of our relationship with God. For throughout the entire week, we so deeply strive to get to Shabbos Kodesh. You know, the average person, I think, loves Shabbos Kodesh, the notion of, even if it's a physical love, a physical desire, because you love the kugel, or you love the chant of Shabbos, or let's say it's even a spiritual one, you know, in regular times, going to shul, being able to connect with other people, connect with the davening. What most people don't realize is that by the time we get to Shalashudas, many of us sometimes feel in the state of mind, they're like, okay, we're done with this, it's now time, we need to check our phones, we need to see what we missed in the world. But it's a progression. If you start off in this really high point on Shabbos, on Friday night, then we get higher and higher, and Shalashudas is the pinnacle of all that. And that's why it's so crazy. You have people that want to run away from Shabbos, that want to finish Shabbos as early as possible, but that's just basically like a slap in the face, excuse me, it's basically a slap in the face to God, because here you are speaking to him face to face, and you're saying, oop, gotta run, 10 minutes, Shabbos is over in 10 minutes, let me go start Marv. Let me finish my Shalashudas a little early so that I can dive into Hashem, so that I can daven already, so that I can go to my hockey game or whatever it might be. Shalashudas is the time of really connecting to Hashem. And to conclude, if we can understand that and realize that that's what Shalashudas is all about, and that's also what the conclusion of Shabbos is all about, just in a nutshell, not just by eating a meal, but just that time in general, we should realize that in these times that we're living in right now, in which most of us are not really running anywhere, and most of us don't have anywhere to go by the time Shabbos is over, that we should make the most of this time that we're living in, and we should realize that these final moments of Shabbos should just be extended a little bit more. Push them 5 extra minutes or 2 extra minutes, whatever it is. Push it a little bit longer, and God willing, in the zechus of that and the merit of that, we'll be able to merit to get out of this crazy world that we're living in right now. But realize that the end of Shabbos is what it's all about, connecting to Hashem, having that really deep connection. With that, we'll close. Everyone should have a great night and a beautiful Shabbos.